In material life, viraha or separation causes only grief. But on the transcendental plane, viraha produces extreme ecstasy within. Though externally, the inner ecstasy is reflected as acute anguish. Viparlamba therefore nourishes sambhoga enjoyment within. In fact, sambhoga is an external feature of the viparlamba ras and the state known as prema vaichitra, or loving variegatedness. The devotee incessantly and intensely recollects Krishna and his pastimes in viparlamba rasa, to the point of never forgetting Krishna. This is indeed the super excellent stage of bhajan. So this element of viparlamba, because it's will have a tendency to not be well appreciated or well understood. Because in this world, and when one is together, then there is so much happiness when people are together. But when they're not, then that is where they will not feel very satisfied. So the difficulty comes is that you're dealing with the temporary and the material. So when one is, the senses are not in contact with the sense objects, technically there is no relationship between them. Right? Also, emotionally, then what one is attached to, and the object that one is, who is attached and what is who one is attached to, then the thought of that may invoke or generate more feelings of emotion, but they don't actually have a connection with what one is attached to. Right? Therefore, there still is a lack of satisfaction. Right? But in the spiritual world, what you are attached to is non-different than the person that you are attached to. You know, the thought of them. Does that make sense? Means the devotee is with Krishna, then when they're not with Krishna, then that thinking of Krishna, they are still with Krishna. Right? So that's why he's saying is internally, vira extreme ecstasy within. Therefore, viparlamba nourishes sambhog or enjoyment within. In fact, sambhog is an external feature of the viparlamba rasa in the state known as prema vaichitya. Right? Prema vaichitya that was mentioned before. Where was that? In Anuraga, the lover and beloved enrapture one another into obedience. There's even a longing to be born as animals or other lower species. This is called prema vaichitya. Right, so there's the element of separation then is very strongly manifest here. Right. So, because it's non-different, then it nourishes the element of sambhog. Because if you're with, then naturally that's going to be very nice. But then when one's not with, then that desire for being with is generated. I'm saying, otherwise you're with someone all the time, it will be nice. But then there's the element of variegatedness. We always have to remember that one of the elements or natures of energy is variety. Because it's always changing. So the tendency anyway is to be separated from. So we see that this element is very much worked into the pastimes. So when it can be manifest, we see is that whatever is going on in the material world has a certain degree of intensity that increases. But it's nothing compared to the situation on the Brahman platform. From there then we see Vaikuntha is there, that moves up slowly to Dwarka, Dwarka to Mathura, Mathura to Vrindavan. So in Vrindavan and the pastimes, any of the Goloka pastimes, you always have this element of Vipalamba, which you don't you have to some degree in the other, but it's just part of the whole social system. You know what I'm saying? Is that, you know, you have your time and then that you're there in the court, and then after that, then the Lord takes rest, so then, you know, one is very happy that this is going on nicely. And so there'll be the element of separation, but it is not as intense. So we see, and always in the past times it's worked in, of being there and not being there. There is the element of Ananda Vrindavan, where the devotees, there is no separation. Everything's always sambhog, so Radha Krishna are always together. But the element there is then it's always nice in that way. So the Vipralamba is seemingly not as nice. So for some, they want to avoid that. So they'll establish that sambhog is actually the highest thing. So from that perspective, it is for them. But when you're trying to bring out the maximum element of rasa, then the Vipralamba must be part of the taste. Otherwise, it won't get to that point. Because if you like the person so much, then when you're not with them, you'll feel bad. Then when you obtain again, you're so much happier. But then the element of then losing them again becomes prominent. So then, therefore, even when you're with, you're always worried about the separation. And when you're separated, you're always absorbed in them. Does this make sense? So they're basically non-different. Like that. So this Vipralamba is then brought out. Let's see what he says further. The air... Yes.
It's like that, that Vipralamba is nourishing some boat. So why some devotees that are like Jagannath Mishra passed away and Vishwa left home, Nityananda's father also passed away. Why did they choose, I mean, why after big pain of separation, why did they pass away? Why did they leave their body if they could actually basically just...
It's a different, if it's a, it's a different rasa. No? So you're going to have the element of the pastime itself. That just makes up part of the pastime, like that. The other element, yeah. So it's exact details in that I don't know. I wouldn't be able to say. They do have the element that someone like Srimati Radharani, the other main gopis, then when Krishna left Vrindavan, they still maintained themselves. But the other ones, then they left. So many others left, like that. So it's just the, in other words, the particular kind of commitment and all that. Because you see, his mother that never goes. Said Krishna's mother never goes, right? So Dasarath may have left, or Jagannath Misra may have left, but in neither case, then his mother went. So it's just that the particular... See, the father has the element of the protection and everything. That's the a living part of it, no? But for the mother, it's just the affection of it, the nourishing of it. Does that make sense? So even in the Vipralamba, the relationship is nourished. But the other one, you can't perform your duty. Does that make any sense? The heir of the Gauranga Nagari sect. The Sambhoga exhibited by the pretentious group known as Gauranga Nagari, who do not sincerely practice Krishna consciousness, but claim to be devotees. is simply a result of their insincerity. We miss note here. We'll hear about these more in detail later, the Gauranga Nagaras, when we study the Upasampradayas. But even of Upasampradayas, the other Upasampradayas don't appreciate the Gauranga Nagaras. Somehow or another, they're, you know, even, yeah, the other Sampradayas consider them bogus. Like that. Because they're just, their approach is just so strange. You know, the other ones is just, Sahajiyas are just cheap. They're discussing real stuff, but they're discussing it. They're putting themselves very cheaply on a level to be qualified to taste something of higher. But the Gauranga Nagaris actually have a different approach. That Sambhoga is a severe impediment on the pure devotional path is factually only self-pleasure. Hence it is bereft of sincere devotion to Krishna. Because sambhog means you're with, so that means you think you're going to be happier, so you prefer that, right? I mean, that's just the general statement, not here. So the element of vipralamba, then one will figure that one won't be happier. So one has a tendency to stay away from that. But what's being brought out here by Lord Chaitanya is what he is offering then is this position of vipralamba, because others haven't offered it. Nimbarka, there is no vipralamba in that worship of Radha Krishna. They worship Radha Krishna in platform of Raghunatha Bhakti. But there is no Vipalamba. It's only Sambhog. So they're actually going to a different Vrindavan. They're not going to Braja. Right? They're worshiping Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, but it's not Braja Krishna. Like that. Because that then you have the element of Vipalamba. So the pastimes as we know it. The Astakaliya Lila, you see that Radha and Krishna are sometimes together, sometimes not. But in them, they'll have Astakaliya Lila, but they'll always be together, just all the different times of day they do different things. Does that make sense? Just by knowing the meaning of the shloka, the desire to gratify one's own senses is kama, lust. But the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, love. CC Adi Lila 4.165. One is spared from the urge to sense enjoyment. Unfortunately, unscrupulous pseudo-devotees try to disguise their lusty urges by presenting Lord Chaitanya to the world as a pleasure seeker, Nagari. But the true meaning of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes is that Lord Krishna descended as Lord Chaitanya to accept the sentiments of an Ashray Tattva devotee who is constantly absorbed in the Vipralamba mood. A Gauranga Nagari. Gauranga Nagar means he's an enjoyer. So they always see him as a grihastha who's always together in the mood of sambhog, always with the devotees, always with his internal potency and everything like that. Like that. But what they're trying to, what he mentioned here is they're trying to cover their own desire for sense gratification. My Lord's always absorbed, so like this. As mentioned, Vipralamba nourishes enjoyment. But it is Krishna's enjoyment that is being nourished by the pure devotee in this mood. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is eternally the embodiment of Vipralamba Rasa, and he personally propagates this means of nourishing Krishna's pleasure among the jivas who must discard the futile attempts for Sambhoga Rasa. So, if one is in any way, shape, or form going to present himself as a Rasik devotee, then we see here is that then it must come in the form of Vipralamba. Right? So those who profess Sambho as highest, then that's not actually the mood of Bhakti of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? And so then one would have to be consider oneself in a different line like that. The quote, without seeing your lovely face, how am I going to live through these wretched days and nights? Srila Madhavendra Puri's words as recorded in Padyavali, text 400. O compassionate Lord of the helpless, O Lord of Mathura, when will I be able to see you? Our absence has made my stricken heart extremely anxious. O my beloved, what am I to do now? in Ujjvala Nilamani. Text 64. Srimati Radharani is completely smitten. She is experiencing the limitless ocean of suffering as the 10 conditions of separation overcome her. She ponders without sleeping and suffers perturbations. She has become emaciated and pallid. She speaks incoherently, is stricken, mad, and deluded, and swoons almost to death. So that's an opening then to the next verse, the last verse. Aslishava pararatam pinashtumam adarshanan marmahatam karotuva yatatata va vidatatu lampato mat prana natastu saevana para. Translation. Let Krishna tightly embrace this maidservant who has fallen at his lotus feet. Let him trample me or break my heart by never being visible to me. He is a debauchee, after all, and can do whatever he likes. But he is still no one other than the worshipable Lord of my heart. Sri Sanmodhana Bhasya. The consciousness of the devotee who reaches the sublime platform of prema is described in this sloka. Quote, that supreme adulterer and libertine, Krishna may grant endless bliss to this servant, surrendered to his lotus feet. Or may he may drive me into excruciating depths of despair by not being present before me. He may please to do anything he wants with me, even to the extent of enjoying with another of his beloved gopis in my presence. Yet he remains always the Lord of my heart. For me, there can be never be any other person. We find accounts of the incomparable position of such fully surrendered souls in Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, when the mortal living beings finally decide to relinquish all fruit of activities and totally surrender to me, I reciprocate by giving them the nectar of immortality, elevating them to become my eternal associates. My conclusion is that in Krishna Prema, Krishna becomes the life, soul, and greatest treasure of the devotee. In this mature stage of devotional service, the sublime exchanges of mutual attraction between the devotee and the Lord flower into full bloom. He's saying nourish before, so he's saying the nourishment of that is that, see, Krishna is getting so much pleasure in the association of the devotees. And that separation from the devotees then increases the devotee's desire to be with him and think about him. And, you know, I mean, just serve him, that whole mood towards him. So Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. So that means that greater those feelings that the devotee has, the greater Krishna's pleasure is. Does that make sense? So, he knows what it's like to taste what the devotees, their surrender, but what they taste in that separation from him, that he doesn't know. So that he comes as Lord Chaitanya to taste. Right? That's where the Gauranga Nagari is completely missed the boat. So, here then is that, see, someone who you do everything right, they will love you, that's one level. And that's pretty standard. You know, no one can disagree with that. But someone who will love you despite what you do, then that is an amazement. That puts one in a more confident position. One is feeling more, one's position is more strong. Therefore, one's activities can be also more intense. Right? Does this make any sense? So, when the devotees are in this stage of surrender, that means then Krishna is free to do whatever he likes. But it's that love that will bring them back, because anybody else doesn't have that kind of love. Does that make sense? That also then gives rise to the element of the left wing. Right? His right wing is, I do everything right. I'm surrendered, therefore then naturally they surrender. So that, but when that is taken to an extreme, then that sense of ownership is there. Right? So no matter what, Krishna is the Lord. So in that case, then Krishna will be much more controlled. Right? Does that make sense? But at the same time, it will externally appear as if he's much more free to do as he likes. Does that make sense? This is confidence. You know, the confidence in that relationship is greater. The other one, then, that surrenders more and all that, on one level, but at the same time is also what he can do is less. Does that make sense? Okay. Prema Dharma. Sri Prahlad Maharaj says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, just as pieces of iron rush of their own volition, attracted by a magnet, similarly by the independent will of the Supreme Lord, my heart and mind have shaken off attachment from material life. Now I am being forcefully drawn as if by a magnet to his lotus feet. This statement demonstrates the truth of the eternal bond between the infinitesimal jiva and the infinite Supreme Lord. This relationship becomes obscured when the jiva gives up Krishna consciousness. But when by good fortune the living entity's consciousness becomes purified, then the mutual attraction between the Lord and his part and parcel is revived. A piece of iron, when clean and shining, is automatically attracted to a magnet. Similarly, the consciousness of the spirit soul, when purified, clean and shining, will automatically exhibit attraction to Krishna. Besides facilitating this attraction, self-purification has no unction. The path of Krishna consciousness is called Prema Dharma, the dharma of loving devotional service. Sadhakas of the Prema Dharma must know that save and except for Prema, this path of religion neglects all results desired by those who pursue Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Yeah, so in other words, so here he's saying is that when the heart is purified, just like the iron when it's cleaned, then the attraction is there. So therefore, for someone following Prema Dharma, purification is no more important than what its help in facilitating attraction to Krishna. Does that make sense? Because the only point is attraction to Krishna. Other things aren't as important. So all these other elements of rasa then naturally will... So that's what makes Braja special in the way it is, because of this element of this, how do you say? The particular kind of prema dharma that is here, is that attraction is all that there is. There is nothing else. Right? So all these other forms that are there, they're nice, they're part of the culture, but they're not the important aspect. Right? In other words, in Braj, the attraction is what's important. Well, you see in Vaikuntha, the element, or Dwarkas, the element is that of expression through the forms. Does that make sense? In other words, the forms take more, they start to take more prominence than they would in Braj. Does that make sense? Braj, you have the best of all forms, but that's not what's important. It's the attraction that's important. Does that make sense? So, but in Dwarka, then the form becomes, its position is more important in expressing the kind of affection that they have. Does that make sense? So Dwarka, I mean, in Vaikuntha, it'll be more. So when you come into the material world, if we're being progressive, then the form becomes very important. Right? If someone follows the form, then they're considered a nice devotee. They don't follow the form, they're not a good devotee. Right? But that's just for the form's sake. Not that the form is being followed, that's good, because that brings you closer to Krishna. Though the form itself takes a predominantly important role. Does that make sense? Therefore, if someone ever makes a mistake, there's the idea they can't make any advancement, or how can they hold any devotional, how would they have any devotional standing? Right? Does that make sense? So the form of it, in other words, the purification, takes on basically a life of its own, right? It basically becomes the predominant element of the religion, right, of the Dharma. So instead of it being prema dharma, it basically becomes your you know, sadhana dharma. Does that make sense? So the religion is based on the sadhana itself. And so because of that, then there'll be some who will follow that, and then those who are not following then they will consider them something less or not even devotional at all, right? That's your orthodox. Then your liberals then are going to basically make up their own religion, right? Because they can't follow the other one, and they think only if you only follow that, that's Krishna conscious. So they'll throw that out and try to stick to the mood is more important. But if you check, it's actually not the mood, because they just use a different form, and if you don't follow their form, then you're also not actually devotionally situated. Does that make sense? So it means, because if it was actually the case that it was just the mood, then they would be perfectly happy with the conservative or the orthodox, right? But no, they don't like the orthodox. Does this make sense? What's happening here? So the whole process, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out, is based on Vaidhi Bhakti. So that means the form must be right. But the form is right only because it creates the attraction to Krishna, not because the form is right, therefore that is the religion. Does that make sense? So at this stage, then, is pointing out that the devotion itself is nourishing itself. It's not that it's the self-purification. So it's self-purification is important. It's just like, the point is it to have a shiny piece of iron, or is it to have a piece of iron, you know, attracted by the magnet? That's the difference. So to get the iron to be nicely attracted, it has to be shiny. So therefore, the process of making it shiny is so it can be attracted. But we have to be very careful that we don't think the process of shining, that making it shiny, then that's the work. If it's nice and shiny, then everything's good. Does that make sense? Yeah, and so that means then dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, all those are not important. Does that make sense? Lord Krishna substantiates this truth in the Srimad Bhagavatam. My dear gopis, severing all family attachments for my sake, you have achieved what is very rare even for the great philosophers and yogis. Our meetings with each other are completely pure and unblemished. If I tried to repay my debt to you for your love, devotion, service, and renunciation, even if I endeavored with my immortal body, throughout all eternity, I would be unable to do it. I am obliged to you life after life. Though you may consider me absolved of any debt out of your natural meekness and loving demure, I will nonetheless always remain beholden to you. As indicated by the Lord's declaration of indebtedness to the gopis, to please and attract Krishna, one should love and satisfy the devotees who he holds most dear. In other words, one who desires entrance into Krishna consciousness must have no interest in selfish so-called pleasures. A devotee serves Krishna, has affection for him, meets him, or may do anything. The sole intention is to please Krishna and increasing one's loving service to him. Lord Chaitanya uses the phrase deeply afflicted in the heart in this shloka. In reality, the devotee does not feel grief but exultation. To confirm this fact, Lord Krishna tells the gopis, quote, "For my sake, you disregarded social taboos, Vedic injunctions, and even cut off connection with your relatives and family members. In all this, your meditation on me was single-minded. You did not even care for your beauty and nuptial happiness. So in order to increase your love for me, I disappeared from your sight. Please do not blame me for this act of love, because you're extremely dear to me as I am to you. Yeah, so here, we see is that discard for social taboos, Vedic injunctions, relationships with the relatives, all that, then it's a package. So we see is that they're not worried about Vedic injunctions, they're not worried about the different social taboos, because they're only worried about Krishna's pleasure. So if we find that we're not worried about Vedic injunctions or social taboos, but we're very worried about our own conditioning, our own ideas and own pleasures, then we can see this is not actually what's being talked about here. Does that make sense? To say that, well, it doesn't matter if it's Vedic or modern, it's just the love for Krishna. But if that's there, then you're willing to, if it's like, we're very willing to give up Vedic, are we willing to give up modern? You know what I'm saying? So that's the test. So just saying, oh, we don't care for these things, we just care for love for Krishna, okay. But that means you're willing to give up also the other things that you're conditioned to. Right? Does that make sense? So, and generally you'll see that's by somebody who hasn't grown up in a Vedic environment. So it's very easy to renounce, because they don't have any entrance or any attachment to. But the real thing would be, but these gopis grew up in that. They're girls, their whole character and everything depends upon all these social values and social taboos and all this kind of thing. So they're willing to give up all that, all their position, all their everything, their respect for that, for Krishna. So we would have to see the same. You know what I'm saying? So the modern social taboos are having faith, having trust. Like that. So you would be willing to have faith, have trust, respect authority. Right? Those are the modern social taboos. You would be willing to give those up for Krishna. But if you're not willing to give those up, but you're willing to give up the Vedic, but giving up the Vedic, that's like, I don't even have any money, and I say, I renounce all money, and money is stupid. You don't know what money is. So, okay, even if you do, okay, great, you've given that up. You know, you didn't have it in the first place, but you know, you're not attracted or bewildered by it. Great, okay. But now give up your own conditioning. Right? Because the Vedic is one form of conditioning in this world. But the modern is another kind. Does that make sense? So the point is the gopis are willing to give up anything that may be deemed, beneficial for Dharma, Artha, Kama, or Moksha. They're willing to give up all those aspects to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Another important point in the shloka is that although the Lord speaks of giving me bliss by your loving embrace, there is no trace of self-satisfaction. Even here, the only thought is of loving Krishna by giving oneself to him for his pleasure. Lord Chaitanya's sentiments very much exemplify the true emotions of pure love. The significance of Shikshastika. The 8 shlokas of the Shikshastika are preeminently significant. Lord Krishna desired to know, quote, how glorious is Srimati Radharani's love for me, she being my internal spiritual potency. How does she alone fully relish my transcendental qualities? What is the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of my love for her? Longing to answer these three questions, okay, right? They're... Okay, how glorious is her love? How does she relish? And what is the happiness? Right? You understand? So samanda abhideya prayojana. How glorious is her love? Right? So that would be the element of Madan Mohan, right? Of sambandha. How does she feel alone fully relish my transcendental qualities? So that will be Govindaji or Abhideya. What is the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of my love for her? That will be Gopinath, of prayojana. Understand? Longing to answer these three questions, the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna revealed his eternal form as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who personifies audarya or magnanimity in absolute fullness. Sri Chaitanya savors to their mysterious depths the three states of Radharani's love as he performs manifold pastimes in the exclusive region of Goloka known as Sri Navadvip Dham. Right, so he savors all three of these. So then the one here, how glorious is the love? That's something you can, you know, you can see and all that. You can, the symptoms are there, therefore that will manifest the Sankirtan movement. So some will take that is external, because it does deal with one element of it. It's external. But the point is he's dealing with Srimati Radharani. So internal and external are important for him to taste. So to simply say that the Sankirtan movement is external, because of this, then that would be a mistake. Because the point is, even if it's external, still the external manifestation is how Radharani loves him. Right? It will be manifest through some form. Right? Does that make sense? You know, love is expressed. Adorned with the ecstatic sentiments and lustrous complexion of Srimati Radharani, Krishna as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears on this earth once in a day of Brahma. His most recent descent to the mortal plane occurred in the year 1486 of the Christian era in the West Bengal district of Nadia, where the divine waters of Mother Ganga purify the town of Navadvip. Navadvip Dham is not different from Vrindavan. He took his birth during a full lunar eclipse on the bright moon night of the month of Phalgun, March. The whole town of Navadvip was reverberating with the chanting of God's name, as this was the custom during a lunar eclipse. The Lord accepted Pandit Jagannath Mishra and Srimati Sachi Devi as his mother and father. His childhood was filled with childlike restlessness and miraculous pranks. His boyhood days were spent in studies. His marriage and youth was strictly in accordance with Vedic culture, as was his execution of household life. Thereafter, he went to Gaya and accepted spiritual initiation in the 10-syllable Gopal mantra from Sripad Ishwara Puri, the great Acharya in the Brahma Madhva disciplic succession. Thus, he taught the living entities their duty to take shelter of a self-realized spiritual master, as directed in the scriptures. After his return from Gaya, he performed congregational chanting of the holy name with his associates and devotees, flooding Bengal with the nectar of the holy name of God and propagating devotional service to Krishna. At age 24, he received sannyasa initiation from Sripad Keshava Bharati of the Shankara Sampradaya and forever severed all links with home and family life. The next 6 years found him on pilgrimage through Bengal, Orissa, South India, Maharashtra, Uttar Pradesh, Mathura, Vrindavan, Prayag, Kashi, and Bihar. Kaukai is probably Kanai Natshala, Rajmahal. In his travels, he blessed millions of conditioned souls by giving them the holy name of Krishna and teaching them the science of pure devotion. He refuted all philosophical speculations, contradictory to the conclusions of the authorized scriptures, and firmly established the philosophy of the Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, which he himself taught for the first time as the essence of the teachings of the other four schools of Vaishnava philosophy. For the next 18 years, he made his residence at Sri Jagannath Puri. There, in the company of intimate associates, he relished the nectar of love of Godhead, exploring fully the three questions. From amongst his followers, he sent out powerful preachers to lead the conditioned souls along the path of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In this way, he drowned entire India in the waves of Krishna Prema. He requested many intimate associates like Sri Swarup Damodar, Sri Ramananda Rai, Sri Prabodhananda Saraswati, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Kavi Karnapur, and others to write books establishing his teachings. For this purpose, he impregnated their hearts with his divine potency. He has personally condensed these self-same teachings into his 8 Shikshastika prayers. They reach out and touch all levels of devotees. At times, the Lord would immerse himself in the nectar of these 8 shlokas, tasting their conclusions in the association of Sri Rasarup Damodar and Sri Ramananda Rai. Later, these shlokas were explained in great detail in important scriptures, like Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. By his own example, Lord Chaitanya taught how to lead an ideal household life and a life of strict renunciation, sannyas. These teachings, too, are all contained in these 8 verses. They are super excellent. Surrendered souls who read with devotion these nectarine prayers from the mouth of the Supreme Lord Gauranga will certainly be attracted to the honey of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. Like spiritually intoxicated bees, they will swarm to the lily-filled lake of Krishna's love. 401 years after the advent of Lord Gauranga, the commentary known as Sri Sanmodanapasya was composed by Kedarnath Bhaktivinoda. The Shikshastika prayers particularly distill the essence of all Vedic scriptures for the taste of the Rasika Bhakta, the pure devotee. Having emanated from the lips of the Supreme Lord himself, these prayers are the absolute truth. They should be read, recited, and worshipped daily by sincere and fortunate souls. These prayers should be as constant companions, learnt and taken to heart. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, 20:48-52. Quote, I am a maidservant at the lotus feet of Krishna. He is the embodiment of transcendental happiness and mellows. If he likes, he can tightly embrace me and make me feel oneness with him. Or, by not giving me his audience, he may corrode my mind and body. Nevertheless, it is he who is the Lord of my life. My dear friend, just hear the decision of my mind. Krishna is the Lord of my life in all conditions, whether he shows me affection or kills me by giving me unhappiness. Sometimes Krishna gives up the company of other gopis and becomes controlled, mind and body, by me. Thus he manifests my good fortune and gives others distress by performing his loving affairs with me. Or, since, after all, he is very cunning, obstinate debauchee with a propensity to cheat, he takes to the company of other women. He then indulges in loving affairs with them in front of me to give distress to my mind. Nevertheless, he is still the Lord of my life. I do not mind my personal desires. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna. For his happiness is the goal of my life. However, if he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Okay, commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Oh, yes. Go ahead. Yes, please. You can say, yes, in one sense you could say that, but at the same time it's the basis of Krishna's interaction with the jiva. Right? So in other words, the basis of Krishna's interaction with his potency, his compassion. That is there. He has his compassion. That's why it goes on. That's why the devotees come, and that's there. But the difference is he works on the principle as you surrender. This is where it will look like that. As you surrender, he'll reciprocate. You don't surrender, he won't reciprocate. So that's Advaitacharya's problem, is that he would like to reciprocate with the affection of the devotees of the Kali Yuga, the persons of Kali Yuga. But no one is surrendering, so as the Lord, he can do nothing. So that means is that the living entity can only get benefit and actually develop love for God and be freed from the material entanglement by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of the Lord. Right? So, but at the same time, as the Lord says, only as you surrender, I'll reciprocate. Does that make sense? So Advaitacharya is stuck. So only Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna, but taking the mood of the devotee, because the devotee doesn't make such a statement. You know, you're surrendered to Krishna, you're not surrendered to Krishna, it doesn't matter, they're going to tell you about Krishna. You understand? Krishna, only when you make that what, bending on your step, that's how he reciprocates. Right? Because he's already taken the first step by establishing everything that you could become Krishna conscious by. Now you take a step in that direction, he'll of course take 10 steps towards you. But the point is you still have to take a step. So Advaitacharya can't do anything. But Lord Chaitanya, taking the mood of the devotee, they don't worry about you take a step, you don't take a step, they'll still take a step towards you. The devotees hold Ratha Yatra, you know, whether anybody's interested or not. They go out and preach whether anyone's interested or not. You know what I'm saying? So in that way, then that the main thing is compassion. So it's taking the mood of the devotee. Yes.
So he's helping even if we don't think.
If we don't make
a step.
But then you have to be somehow or another connected with the devotees. Mm-hmm. They're saying the devotees are anyway, but you're only getting credit when you. You know, try to take advantage. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise it would be foolish to just say, well, I'll sit here and do nothing and I'll wait for the devotees to work it out for me. You know what I'm saying? Because the karmis don't know that, therefore they're not, you know. So that's why it says it's causeless mercy, so that you've been connected. That's already the causeless mercy. Now one should take advantage of that causeless mercy. Does that make sense? Okay, so then today is Monday, right? So we'll continue tomorrow with the commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.